What's up, guys? Saf here on Super Saf Speaks, and for the first time, we have Thunder E, my co-host.
Yes, thanks for having me, man. I'm here in the flesh, guys.
In the flesh. Usually, we've had to do this virtually over the internet. Thank God for the internet. But he's actually now here in Leicester. He's here for a project, which can we talk about?
No, we
can't talk about it yet.
No, we can't.
But it's going to be coming very soon. It's a really fun and exciting project. So he's come all the way here to Leicester. So far we've had Kogan. David Kogan's come to Leicester.
Mm-hmm.
You've come to Leicester. Let's see who else we can have venture out to here. So yeah, let's start off with Leicester. What do you think?
Leicester's cool. It's a very different vibe that I'm used to, but it's a very chill place. People are friendly. Good food.
Of course.
Some solid fish and chips, Nando's, more food.
Yep.
And food.
One thing Leicester is good for is food. We've got a good variety. It's very diverse. So for those of you guys who don't know, Leicester's like one of the most multicultural cities in the UK. One of the reasons why I stay here. But the biggest advantage of that is you get food from everywhere. So, you know, you can get African food, you can get Middle Eastern food, you can get Indian,
yes,
American, everything.
A whole plethora, which is great. I mean, for someone like me who I like to eat a lot of different types of foods, different places, to me it's perfect. But yeah. It's been a fun time here. The project we were working on was lots of fun.
Yeah, you'll find out. Stay tuned on our channels. You'll find out about it very soon. Now, apart from that, we are going to be talking about lots of tech. I know we've not done an episode in some time, but we're going to be talking about a brand new fresh leak on the Samsung Galaxy S22 Ultra. This is the first leaked images, physical images. We've seen lots of different mm-hmm. renders, so we'll be taking a look at that. There's the Google Pixel 6 Pro, which we've both been using for the past
mine's here somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere he's got it. But we've been using it for the past couple of weeks, so we're going to be talking about that as well. The MacBook Pros. So I have the MacBook Pro, which has been my primary laptop, the new M1 Max powered MacBook Pro, shall we say. So I'll give you my thoughts. He will give you his thoughts about that as well after using it for a couple of weeks. And what else do we have on the agenda?
And I believe we'll be dabbing into the metaverse.
Yes, the metaverse. I don't know a huge deal about that. I'll be completely honest with you. I've been kind of disconnected on that side. But yeah, it'll be good to find out a bit more about that. And we'll also have a look at a few questions, because there's been a few questions that have come in over Instagram and Twitter. So we'll have a quick flick through that mm-hmm. to the end. Now, one of the things that a lot of people have been asking is, why is this full podcast not in video form anymore? And that's pretty much just been because of YouTube, the way YouTube works. Having the full video edited podcast episodes just don't seem to do so well on YouTube, because it's very much longer form content. So what we've done is we've got the audio only on all the podcast streaming platforms, and then we've got the clips. So, you know, we've condensed the clips, so you'll pretty much get the full podcast experience, but instead of, you know, going through chapters, you can just view the clips as they're labeled and as they come out. So, you know, it's not ideal, but this is what we're doing right now, and we haven't been so consistent, but that's because Techtober was crazy, dude. Like, we were so packed with lots of different stuff.
Yeah.
It was just impossible to also do the podcast. Now things have started to slow down somewhat. I mean, it's still busy, obviously, the fact that he's here. It's still busy, but at the same time, we've got a little bit more room to breathe, so we can start getting back into the podcast. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
First thing I want to talk about is this new massive leak on the Samsung Galaxy S22 Ultra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this comes from Front Page Tech, John Prosser, as always. Now, we've seen lots of renders initially. There were some renders initially from OnLeaks, and they had this sort of P-shaped design
for the
camera module. And that was, you know, people were like, some people were like, oh, this is cool. Other people were like, oh, we absolutely hate it. But from these images that we've seen, it looks like it's not going to be exactly that type of P-shaped design. It's going to be more separate camera modules in that sort of layout, mm-hmm. but it kind of reminds me of the Note 10. When we had the Note 10 and the Note 10 Plus, where we had, but those were all one module, and then they had the dots at the side. With this, it's going to be all of the dots, which, you know, I think looks pretty good. We've got a matte finish at the back. But first thing I want to ask you is, what did you think of the initial P-shaped leaks, and what do you think now?
I mean, I love the P-shaped look. I thought it was fine. I know a bunch of people were like, oh, we don't like it. But then again, I always like when Samsung changes the modules every year. It can be expensive, actually, if you think about it. Manufacturing year and out, but it provides a very fresh approach, especially if you're one who has the ability to upgrade with your carrier. You've got a new device and it looks funky, looks different, that kind of thing. Now the new look, I think it's fine. To me, it's a bit more boring, honestly, but
but I think you kind of have to strike a balance between being safe, which is not going to just kind of make people go, whoa, what is that sort of thing, but at the same time, because to be honest, the S21 Ultra has a very unique design right now, right? And I thought they're going to stick with that, but it looks like no, they're actually going to change things up for the Ultra version anyway. I do like the look of it. It's got a matte finish, looks much more like a Note device than an S device, and that is because it does have an S Pen, and we can see that in the leaks. Looks pretty thick, and we do have the S Pen enclosed in the housing, which, you know, personally for me, I'm so excited about. As well here, we are huge fans of the Note series, and not having a Note device in 2021 was definitely quite disappointing. But now, more and more every year, people were saying, what is the Note series? Is it just an S device with an S Pen, right? And that was something that kept coming up year and year. And I think over the years, the Note series and the S series just kept getting more and more close together. So now to combine them into one and having the Ultra with the S Pen included, I think that's actually a good move from Samsung. And I think it's going to be successful because it's going to keep the Note users happy. Then obviously you're going to have the S22 and the S22 Plus for all of those who don't necessarily want that enclosed S Pen. But yeah, I'm very, very excited about it. Looking at the front, we've got the curved display. So that's something that we were expecting. Of course, it's likely going to be 120 hertz with the Quad HD Plus resolution. In terms of the camera specs, from what we're seeing, it's going to be very similar to what we've already got on the S21 Ultra.
Yeah, see, that I'm not too sure, though. I know, look, front page check said it's 108, which is not the same sensor, but at least the same megapixel count for the last 2-3 years, right,
roughly? Not the 200
megapixel that was just announced.
So
it's but new sensor. I have a feeling that might change. That's just my own personal feeling here. What I'm more interested, though, from Samsung, and we know the Ultra is going to pack the best they can give, but will the Plus and the regular 22 improve on their cameras? Because what we've seen from competition, aka Apple and Pixel, is that you have almost the same set of camera arrays, other than some differentiations, right? There's no wide angle lenses or something like that. No telephoto.
No telephoto is generally the one that they miss out. But then when you look at the primary camera on the ultra wide on the Pixel, it's exactly the same, whether you got the 6 or the 6 Pro. So yeah, that consistency would be nice on some of the other models. But I mean, I'm excited. I know these leaks are pretty early. It's looking like February time. I'm hearing right now, it looks like we might have the S21 FE coming in January.
See, now that's why I want to ask the question is, because I'm having already mixed minds about it. We're just hearing that rumor is that, do I just say, why buy an S21 FE in January when the S22 may be in February or early March, right? It could be early March when it officially hits the market.
That's true.
Like,
But I think the deal that you'll get on it is just going to be like, look, you know that when the S22 series comes out, you're going to be starting at 800 easy, right?
Yeah.
If this is coming in at 600, that's a good deal.
What if Samsung bites the bullet and says 499?
Yeah, I mean, then there you go. And then that's just it. So then you're appealing to a completely different demographic there. So whoever's going to go for that probably wouldn't have gone for the S22 anyway, because that's kind of more high end. And you know how many S20 FEs they sold last year? They sold the whole deal. So so exciting times with Samsung. It's crazy that straight away in January things are going to start kicking off. We thought we might get a bit of a break. It doesn't look like it's going to happen, but
nope,
that's part of our job. But Google Pixel, right? So I've had the Pixel 6 Pro. My SIM card has been, one of my SIM cards has been in it for about two and a half weeks now.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like about it. There's a few things that, you know, definitely need improvement. So in terms of my overall experience, I think it's been really good. Like it's nice to have a Google-centric phone. I do like the fact that we've got Android 12 on there. The display's good overall. I mean, it's just, it's not as good as the S21 Ultra. It's not as good as the iPhone, in my opinion, when it comes to brightness and things like that. But you've got the 120 hertz refresh rate. It's mm-hmm. It's smooth. I like it. The build and design is my favorite thing, I think. I like that it's unique. It looks different. That visor, it obviously makes for some great thumbnails. But it's just, I do like that we've got something that looks a lot more unique to things that we've not really had in the past couple of years, should we say. Like, we had that sort of visor on the Nexus 6P, so it kind of gives me those vibes as well. So I'm liking the design as well. The cameras, we have to talk about the cameras, of course. Cameras have been really good, I would say, generally, right? Generally. You've got this Pixel look, very, it does have a processed look, and that's something some people like, some people don't like. I think they look pretty good in terms of the photos overall. But there's a few things with the cameras. The ultra-wide camera is just not wide enough.
No, it's not ultra-wide. It's a standard lens almost.
It's almost like, I mean, it's just not as like, when I was comparing it to the iPhone 13 Pro Max, it's just like some areas in terms of detail and like dynamic range, the Pixel is better, but I still would pick the iPhone because it's just wider, and that's what I kind of want from an ultra-wide camera. So that's one of the things there. The telephoto camera is good, but all it's used for is zoom, right? So you've got the zoom there, which is cool, right? You get zoom, right? But then pretty much all the other competitors, like the iPhone 13 Pro Max, also use the telephoto camera for things like portraits.
Yeah.
And that's one area where I think the Pixel has been pretty terrible. It's like almost like a $200 phone, like just kind of drawing a blur around me. So that's one thing that I think, you know, I was like surprised that. Now, it's Google, and they will improve it with software. I know, they always do, right? But to kind of, I'm just surprised that this came out, the factory shooting such terrible portraits, because what it's doing is you've got 1x portraits, right? And then you've got 2x portraits, but you don't have a 2x camera on here. So what it's doing is it's actually using digital zoom, 2x, to give you a 2x portrait look. And firstly, that gives you very low quality, and then the Pixel sharpens up the image post massively, which is very obvious. So at small, it might look like, you know, just, oh yeah, it's okay. But as soon as you look closer to the image, you're like, whoa, okay, that is not a sharp image. It's been post sharpened.
Yeah.
So there is a lot to improve, which will improve with software as well. But, you know, a lot of people were expecting, oh yeah, Pixel's going to come in, it's going to be the best camera out there. That is definitely not the case. What would you say? Would you agree with me?
I have mixed feelings about the Pixel. Because part of my long-term review involved to traveling here to the UK and using the Pixel. So I'll start off with like the things I really like. The eSIM and using Google Fi, absolutely fantastic, because that's how I've been able to connect, get an Uber, call SAF that since I've been here. Those are the kind of things that are really cool. The design, I initially liked it. As a gamer, I don't anymore. Because I tend to use a lot of game controllers, like the one from Razer. I just forgot the name right now.
Kishi.
Thank you. The Kishi does
not fit.
He's
supposed to be the game.
The Kishi does not fit. So I couldn't actually bring it with me, because I was actually thinking of, like, you know, adding some gameplay elements to my video coming here. And I was like, there's a reason why the Kishi is done so well, because you can use it with that device, right?
Okay.
That's one thing. Then my biggest complaint is battery life. My battery life has been a mixed bag beyond belief.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's, and we kind of talked about this earlier, it's LTE connectivity or it's 5G.
Yeah.
Or whatever modem they're using there is definitely not a Qualcomm one. I'm just going to put it out
there. So this is interesting, because you know, there was a lot of controversy online after Marquez did his review, and he said the battery life he's getting on the Pixel was not good, whereas myself and many others said that the battery life we're getting on our Pixels is actually pretty good. It's nowhere near the iPhone 13 Pro Max, don't get me wrong. I would say it's still under the S21 Ultra as well, but nevertheless, I still thought it was good. It still gets me through the day. I'm getting, I'd say, 5 to 6 hours of screen on time, which in my opinion is pretty good. However, what I noticed is if I'm on 5G, it drains the battery very quickly. So generally when I've been testing where I live in Leicester, yes, there's a few spots of 5G, but it's not, you know, out and out like London. So generally when I'm, you know, at home on Wi-Fi, when I'm going to the gym or whatever, I'm, you know, just using my general 4G, LTE, it's fine, right? When I went to London, dude, I had to charge it on my way back, otherwise it would have been dead, right? And this is what I think. I think the way it manages 5G, now we've seen a lot of these others, you know, like iPhone, when it switches dynamically very quickly and it you know, only uses 5G when you need 5G. I don't know the specifics of what's happening here, but I don't, whatever it is, it needs to be more efficient because it is, I've noticed personally, when it's on 5G, it drains battery fast.
So I've been, here in the UK, I don't have 5G connectivity with Google Fi. That's just something you usually have LTE whenever you travel. Yeah. And it's not been good. I would just put it that way. I think you're right with the way the modem handles 5G connectivity reminds me of the very 5G chips that we had, where it was not on the same die, it was separate. Yeah. But even then, at least Qualcomm did mention that you're going to have, because not the same day, you're going to have like a lot of just issues with that in terms of battery life. That's what I'm seeing here. So for me, it's not been an enjoyable experience with that. The other thing that I found quite interesting, which is very fixable, is the software lapses where I'm using an app and it just closes.
Oh, yeah. So now, initially, I was like, look, okay, it's Android 12. It's the first device with Android 12.
Yeah.
There's a certain level of, you know, just compromise that you have to have that. Look, it's new. You're going to have a few app crashes and things like that. But now this is available to customers. Customers can, you know, have it in hand. And, you know, I have so many app crashes. And what's funny is the app crashes I have are mostly on Google Apps. So when it's YouTube, like I'll have YouTube connected to my car and I'll be like just listening to something because that's, you know, generally if it's like a longer video, I'll just have it and suddenly it will just close and just completely. And I'm like, what just happened? And there's no warning, nothing. The Creator Studio app, which is, again, is a Google app, terrible. I can't even use it for more than 30 seconds because it will just crash out on me and just close. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the software experience. You know, I like Android 12, but, you know, it kind of seems like it's not fully baked and they've just pushed it out. It needs some work because all of these app crashes should really not be there on a device that's available to public.
Yeah. No, like now, I'm just going to actually just say this. I don't hate the Pixel 6 or 6 Pro because I've stated a lot of things that I don't like. I do like the device. I think, like you said it, where everybody thought they were going to come in and just destroy. Because that's kind of the impression they gave with the kind of marketing that they went with.
Yeah.
And my opinion is it's come in and it's sort of competing. I won't even say compete. I say sort of because there's just certain things that happen. And it's not a bad device. And even pricing is solid. I think a lot of this is fixable in terms of software. But there's certain things they have to look at moving forward with their devices next year. I think the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro is a good start. And a good start from all the, honestly, the failures they've had in the past, where they can now have a foothold and say, you know what? We're here. We control the chip. We control the software.
Yeah.
Now let's go ahead and craft the Pixel 7 or our next Pixel devices that really take advantage. And honestly, I think they should stop depending on software too much.
Yeah, they have a habit of doing that. And like, I mean, okay, with, you mentioned the chip as well. What do you think of, what's your opinions on the chip, the Tensor chip?
Well, okay, the Tensor chip is built for Google in mind, maybe not all their customers in mind. So in terms of gaming, it will not compete against the Snapdragon or the A14 chipset. No, it's not going to compete in that avenue.
Yeah.
In terms of the AI processing, that's where really it's supposed to do well. And it's not something I know people have done benchmarks. That's something that we can truly measure. I think it's just about how they use it for their own needs. I think that they should, fine, you don't need to go with high, you know, megahertz count for gaming and stuff like that, as long as you can play the games well. What you need to do is work on your processing for photos, your LTE and 5G connection, because if you have a phone that cannot connect to do anything a phone does, it really doesn't matter at all. And your battery life management has to really come to bear, because
it's very inconsistent for a lot of people, as we're seeing. All of the accounts that we're hearing, it's very different. The last point I want to touch on is video, because this was something else that Google really emphasized on, that they've really worked on getting that computational performance on video as well as on images, right? And yes, the video has improved, but it's no way like, you know, I think a lot of people were like very hyped about it, that it's going to compete with the iPhone. It does not compete with the iPhone completely when it comes to video. The iPhone still, I would say, is king. You still don't have things like 4K 60. You only have it on the primary camera. Now, Samsung, they, you know, actually caught up, and now they have 4K 60 across all of the cameras, right? Mm-hmm. With this, you've only got it on the primary camera. Now, that's fine, but then you're not really going to compete with the likes of the iPhone, which has that consistency across the board.
Yeah, and see, that's why I said it's almost there. It's that whole idea of like, you know what, I'll call it like the third best camera, because the Galaxy's video camera is really good.
Yeah.
The iPhone is almost magical. Again, you've got that censorship. That's a piece of hardware that is helping with your software, which is why I said Google should think about going, look, our software is good. We still need the hardware to complement some of these things.
That's the thing, because, you know, like one of the things I've always argued against is, you know, a lot of people used to say before that the Pixel has the best camera. And that statement, in my opinion, has always been incorrect, because when you're talking about a camera, you're not just relying on the primary camera, right? You're looking at the camera package. You're looking at, you know, ultra wide. You're looking at video. You're looking at telephoto. Mm-hmm. Now, when you combine all of these things, I would personally still pick, on the camera side of things, either the iPhone 13 Pro Max or the Samsung Galaxy S21 Ultra. I know we keep mentioning these, but these are the competitive devices that we do have to put it up against. What I will say, however, having said all of that, this is coming in at a lower price compared to those, right?
True. Yeah.
So based on that, yes, it might have some shortcomings, but I still think it's a really good deal. And, you know, it does give you that Google experience. But the S21 Ultra has now started to drop in price as well. So you can kind of get it at a similar price point. So that's something else to keep in mind. But yeah, generally speaking, I'm still using the Pixel. I'm going to carry on using it for some time. I think it's a really good phone, and I think a lot of people will like it. It's not the be all and end all, like, you know, a lot of people were hoping it would be, but it's a good foundation and it's a good direction that Google is going in, I would say.
I absolutely agree. I think you guys will see my full-length video on this. I think there's a lot to like with the Pixel. I think there are things that they definitely need to improve. And also, I put it this way. If the Pixel was from any other brand, it will fail. This is a company, Google, that has the marketing, the money, resources to improve and drive the work they have forward. So I am judging them based on that. I'm not judging them on what they produce, because it's like my mom will tell me, you were raised to do better, so do better.
He's like talking to a child here. All right, the next thing I want to talk about is something that, you know, I was super excited about and I'm still really enjoying, and that is the new MacBook Pro powered by the M1 Max, right? So the first thing I want to say is I really do like this new approach from Apple, where they, you know, have kind of, I mean, they might not admit it that, look, okay, we were wrong, but they've actually listened to feedback, especially of their pro users, right?
Yes, yes.
And they've pretty much given us everything we have been asking for, right? SD card slot, right? I know it's simple and lots of other devices have it, but you've got this,
I've got the Microsoft Surface Laptop Studio.
And guess what? It doesn't have an SD card slot. So that just goes to prove the point. This does. And it's so, so convenient, because now I don't have to worry about the dongle. He was asking me for a dongle for a USB-C SD card reader. And I couldn't even find it, because guess what? I don't need it anymore because I have it in here. Absolutely love that. HDMI is cool. I mean, it's not 2.1, but it's not something that I don't use HDMI much on my MacBook anyway. So,
yeah, but for a pro user, it's still usable.
Yeah. But I mean, it's great. The display.
Right? Yes.
Now, I think we can both agree on the display. Okay, we'll talk about the notch in a second. But man, that display is so good. Like, I would say it's one of the best displays on a laptop right now.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's one of the best. I think you'll find some that might be better. Again, but the price points again are really high. Yeah. The one thing when I did my gaming video, one of the things it was just like playing Fortnite on there, and Fortnite has a lot of vibrant colors, right? So you're playing a game like that, and I'm just looking at it, I was going, wow, this display is really good. It's a very good display, and I think that's something that I'm glad to see Apple has taken a lot of that display tech that they've done on the
iPads,
the
Pro XDR displays.
The Pro XDR displays brought it down to, you know, an iPad, a laptop. Because remember, on the iPad, I get it because they sell more iPads than they sell MacBooks. People don't understand the MacBook is not a big seller for them.
It's a niche. It's a niche product. Niche. You know, as people like us that use it. And for people like us, I mean, it's beautiful. I love the display. It's very bright as well. And, you know, me with the sunglasses, something that I really do appreciate. Okay, let's just mention the notch while we're on the display side of things. I don't mind it because generally where it sits, right, it's where the top bar is, right? The menu bar. Now, Quinn initially posted a thing where, you know, you could, was hiding, but they've fixed that already, right?
But for certain software,
to me, that's not a big deal. I mean, it's comical and it's funny, don't get me wrong. I think it was funny as well initially when we saw it, but it's something that, it's a new piece of thing. It happens. You're going to get it updated within like weeks. It's not going to be a big deal.
I'm sorry. It's stupid. And I'll tell you why. There is no practical use for the notch. There is, again, I repeat, no practical.
Okay.
No, it can be in the future. I get that. But to me, if you threw in Face ID and I went, okay, I get it.
Yeah,
Face ID is for. Okay. There's a lot of sensors in there. I still wouldn't like it, but you told me why it was there.
Yeah.
But because there's no Face ID, I'm going, why do I have it? And when I'm playing a game, the bars just drop and it's like super thick bezels anyway.
Okay.
So
no, I agree with that side of things. I would have liked Face ID. Now you've got Touch ID on here, but cool. You know, I just want to open it, have that Face ID. I think this is not official, but this is me thinking that they did want to put Face ID in there, but maybe they just couldn't manage to get it done. Right? Whether because it's quite slim or whatever the spacing is, I don't know what the reasoning behind it is, but whatever it was, I don't think they could get it done. But this, I'm pretty certain the next version will have it.
Yeah, when the next version comes, put it in there, but not now.
Yeah.
But this is the thing.
I think what happened in the process is, okay, they came up, the plan was we're going to have an improved camera, which has improved massively. I mean, it wasn't, like, let's be honest, right?
It was terrible.
The previous MacBook Pro webcam was terrible. The FaceTime HD camera, 720p, terrible camera. Obviously, there's not much to build on that, but it's really good now, and I really do like using it. Bravo for that. I think, this is just my theory, is that they planned that, okay, this is what's going to happen, but they couldn't get it done in time for whatever reason. Right, we don't know what engineering, whatever. I think it's going to come for the next one. It's not here right now. For me personally, it's not a huge deal, right? Okay, so we've got this the keyboard. You know, I quite like the blacked out keyboard with the. Again, we've got the scissor switches, which I also do like. They work really well.
The keyboard's good. I'm not a fan of membrane style keyboards, so for me that doesn't matter. What I'm more interested in is the fact that we went back to numerals. And not the touch bar.
Yeah.
So that's an admitted failure.
Okay, so.
But I'm glad they listened.
They listened again. And now this is the thing. So like, if I talk to you personally on a touch bar level, right? Okay, initially I was like, I don't need it, right? But then, you know, like say if I'm in a Zoom call, right? You've got shortcut buttons like end call and things like that, which I thought was okay. It's pretty useful, right? Am I upset that it's gone? No.
No.
Right? Okay, it's fine. But again, this is something that Apple listened to, and they've got these full-size keys for you know, the F-Row. Absolutely awesome. Yeah, brilliant. Glad that it's there. Speakers, amazing. I would say some of the best speakers on a laptop. Now, it's thicker, right? Okay, it's a thick boy, and it is quite a bit thicker compared to the previous generation MacBook Pro. Is that a big deal for me? Not so much. Personally, and I'll tell you why that is. For me, there's two reasons why that's not a big deal for me. Firstly, performance. Second, battery life.
Yeah, I would agree with you with that. The only I don't call it a problem. It's just, it was weird in my mind. It's, so I got the 16-inch M1 Max, fully loaded with 1 terabyte. Anything more is just too expensive. And I remember lifting it and I was like, ooh, this is heavy. But when, look, the best thing, as you mentioned, is battery life, because I'll put this out there. I was playing Fortnite, not plugged in, which is a really cool thing. And my battery dropped down by 30%. If I did that on a gaming laptop, not plugged in, I would have probably gone past 50% easily with battery life. So that was really cool to see. And then jumping in to do other things on the device, that's great. I'm not too bothered, but I think a lot of people, I'll put it this way, a lot of people will be fooled by the weight. That's what I'm looking for. Because it still kind of looks like it's lighter, but when you pick it up, then you're like, oh.
It's a big boy, but that's a 16-inch one that we're talking about. Now, here's the thing. I think a lot of people will now opt for the 14-inch one.
Yes,
because now it's not 13 inches. You've got 14 inches because of the smaller bezels, right? You're getting something a bit more compact, but you're not compromising on performance.
Yes.
This is the thing. You're not compromising on performance on the 14-inch. You're still going to get, you can still max it out, right? Which is something that I really do like, right? The other thing as well is the fact that the performance is not impacted when you aren't plugged in.
Yes.
So you can still get that peak performance if you aren't plugged in. And that's something pretty much every other gaming laptop, unless you're plugged in, you're not going to be getting that peak performance, right?
Yeah. Because they use, I mean, the power consumption is way high.
Yeah.
For me, that's one of the things I definitely liked with the MacBook Pro, the 16-inch M1 Max that I use. I agree with Saf that I think for majority of the audience who's looking for a new MacBook Pro, honestly, the 14-inch is where you go. 16 is overkill in general for whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Unless you are editing a short movie or a feature-length movie, you're going to use the 16. Yeah. Other than that, I don't see, but I mean,
for me using this, I use Adobe Premiere Pro. I also use Final Cut. Final Cut's good for me if I want to just do like a quick social edit, right? Mm-hmm. So something for Instagram Reels or something like that. But because I have to switch laptops and I have to go on PC sometimes based on what I do and because I'm reviewing, I have to opt for Premiere Pro. Premiere Pro does work pretty well on here, I have to say. Works really well. I've got no complaints and it's better than it was on my MacBook Pro. If you want to really get the performance benefits, you're going to get that in native software like Final Cut Pro, right?
Yeah.
That's just a fact. That's something that I was expecting anyway, but I do appreciate the improved performance on Premiere Pro. In terms of my full review, obviously we've given you our thoughts over 2 weeks. I'm going to be traveling soon, right? And the real way I actually test out a laptop is when I'm traveling, because that's when I'm going to be on a plane. That's when I'm going to be, you know, using it in the middle of like, you know, an event, taking it out. And that's when I really think that I can really kind of grasp how well it's going to be. So I'll have a 1 month later review coming up, but I have to say, very impressed, really happy that Apple has been taking this feedback on board and pretty much has given us everything that we had asked for. If I had a matte black version of this, I would not complain whatsoever. Like I'd be happy with this laptop and I would, you know, I'd say I don't need anything else.
No. I hear you. I'll put this out this way. You guys have seen my video. It's out there. Gaming performance. I compared it to a RTX 3060. And I'm just going to put this out there. I have to. I'm going to sound like I'm a slightly angry PC fanboy. I'm not. Because a lot of people have been comparing this to a 3080. It does not compare to a 3080. It's not the same thing. A lot of the benchmarks you see are not what it should be in the first place. This compares to a 3060. It outputs at 10 teraflops. Your Xbox Series X does 12, so you can do the math. But what this is, and I think this is what's missing with a lot of the fanboyism you're going to see out there, is that, to me, Apple has made a laptop for the functioning pro. That's more important than any of those benchmarks you see out there, whether it's it compares to 3060 or 3080 or whatever the case may be. It's the fact that I can look in this and go, I can do what I need to do plugged in or out. And I still have roughly 10 hour battery life left, right? That is, to me, is very, very important. That is missing from some conversations out there. I just wanted to point that out because I think, to me, that's more important than some of the benchmarks you see. Because anyone who does true benchmarks will tell you that software is optimized. I cannot compare the performance of Adobe Premiere on a laptop to even that on this, because you know why? Premiere does not use GPU. It used GPU performances here on the MacBook. So again, it's like potato, potato. I just look at it this way. I'm going, congratulations, Apple. You've actually done something that I like.
Yeah.
And it works well for pros. And I'm cool with that because you know what? It helps everybody else improve.
Yep. And that's it. So yeah, very happy with the MacBook Pro. And this will be my, you know, go-to laptop. I personally use a desktop PC.
Yeah.
And a MacBook. That's just my, you know, I use an Android phone and an iPhone. I like to have a balance, but yeah, I'm very happy that they've addressed so much of this stuff. And there'll be lots more MacBook Pro content coming up on our channels. Now, before we sign off, I'm going to just go through some of the comments and questions people have gone through. So we had Lumi asking why we're not playing Warzone anymore.
Lumi's is a good friend of ours. We're prepping for the slowdown period so we can play some Call of Duty Vanguard. That's the excuse.
See, I have not played in about a year and a half almost. I played during the lockdown and then it was just taking up too much time. Like, really enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. Shout out to all the squad that we used to play with. But man, it's so difficult to manage playing and getting the work done, and especially how busy it gets.
Yeah, I mean, what we did playing, the amount of time we played that time, I wouldn't tell you guys, but it was quite a lot. So
yeah, it was definitely a lot. There's a few people, like, I'm just looking through some of the comments that we had, responses here. Metaverse. So that was something we were going to, I almost forgot about it. So Akifu is asking about the Metaverse. So yeah, I'm going to let you take the lead on this one.
Okay, so if the easiest way to explain the Metaverse and the fact that, let's call it, Facebook has co-opted the name Metaverse. Metaverse refers to the adaptation of both the virtual augmented world within your life and the real world. Simply put, you know, we know that there's augmented reality glasses from different companies. Apple's talking about stuff like that. We have VR glasses like the Oculus Rift and things like that. Think of those things coming together and that being part of your world. It's the logical extension of what Facebook should be, because Facebook has become its world on its own.
Mm.
Now, when you expand out to the metaverse, you think of movies like Ready Player One. If you read the book, it really is in that, where you can buy digital things, which you can do now, but you can put in your digital space. You can have your space connected everywhere. So now we're hearing about NFTs and things like that, right? Now, why the metaverse is really important is the fact that we are getting to a place where you can now digitally create content like we do, items, art, things like that, that people consider valuable. It's gotten that place of value. But also, I think if you look at what the pandemic has caused with us being at home and going out of the pandemic, people are now working remotely or just spending like one day in the office. So some people I know are spending one day a month in the physical office. So now you're going, how do we create a virtual space that is so interactive with the physical space? One of the things that I will point to, that you, if you've read any books that have to do with virtual reality, I'm talking about like just sci-fi books, one of the biggest things you always see first talked about is virtual schooling and how the metaverse would change the way kids will learn in the future. So imagine how you would see documentaries where they're helping kids in this African country build a school. You don't have to build that school anymore. You know, you have to provide the glasses or the interface for it, and then you're good.
And a good internet connection.
Exactly. But that's something that a lot of countries are jumping into much faster. Then, to put things on a different note, there was a company that just announced, just after Facebook's announcement, I forgot the name of the company, a system that has 10 cubes. You can place it in your room, and it scans your environment as well as also you. So while you're using your headset or without a headset, you don't need a controller for your games anymore.
Mm.
So your whole body is so if you're playing an FPS, you're holding a gun. If you're playing Street Fighter or something like that, you can now use your body movements in there. And then there's another company that came out and says they built a rig where you can scan any object you own into the metaverse. Mm. So if you think of it from this meta way, somebody can now scan something, put it digitally, make an NFT, tie it to the object, and you can sell that object, rent, whatever you want to do with it to somebody else. And somebody owns something that they've never seen before physically at all. So the world is expanding in a very different way that it might seem a little bit uncomprehensive for some people, but think of it as combining the digital and physical world together, where some things you can see augmented reality, and some things you're almost transported to a different space entirely.
I like the idea of it, but you know, when you mentioned Ready Player One and things, it kind of like also makes me think of, you know, how there's a lot of people, especially when it comes to gaming, for example, right? And you see people who actually look forward to the life, the virtual life, than the real life, right? Yeah. And that's something that for me is something that I'm uncomfortable with, because something I always talk about is we as humans are social creatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as virtual and as good, I'm sure virtual reality and all of that is going to get so good to a point where, you know, it's going to be hard to differentiate what's real and what's virtual. But I still think that real interaction is important. And I think the more this happens and more that youngsters grow into this, the less they'll have real experiences.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely...
It will be replaced by virtual. And I think it's important to have that balance.
Yeah, I think one of the good things that's coming from the metaverse is that luckily there's not one vision for it. So one of the big games that got a huge crypto price increase. Again, I just forgot the name. It just skipped out of my mind. But the game, basically, the crypto price went up. And I was like, what is this crypto?
Yeah,
it's a game that looks like a 2D Pokemon.
Okay.
Like, there's nothing special. There is no augmented. There's no virtual. But, I mean, there's no virtual reality space into it. What it is that the gaming experience has now become a meta. It's almost like taking World of Warcraft, which has a very big community, that idea of a community, but putting it into a 2D scape where you're only looking at a screen. There's nothing else going on. And then you're building a community through that. And then, of course, there's the crypto rewards and all that stuff tied into it. That makes it very different. And I am going, okay, I can see there are different ideas to it. Hopefully, it's not just one vision that Facebook provides, right? And there are other visions where we can go like, oh, okay, I like that. And okay, I'm not with this. But that's the metaverse in a long, short form version.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. We'll see. We'll see how that all goes. But yeah, it's been an exciting time in tech. We're going to be traveling a lot more now.
Yes.
And there's obviously going to be lots of events. There's going to be CES. So we are going to aim. I'm not going to make any promises, but we're going to be aiming to do more of these episodes. We started off initially once a week, but we're going to try to, you know, at least once a month, but ideally every 2 weeks.
Yes. I will say we will definitely do a CES wrap-up episode.
Yes.
Which would be fun because there's a lot of cool stuff we get to see at CES.
Totally. But yeah, hope you enjoyed this episode of the first in-person podcast that we've had. If you did, then, you know, make sure you follow and subscribe onto the YouTube channel. Once again, the clips are going to be on the YouTube channel and the full episode will be available on all of the standard podcast streaming apps, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, etc. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Saf on Super Saf Speaks.
And this is Thunder E from Border Work, live in Leicester.
And we'll see you next time.